This was a great conversation. We got to sit down with Steve Stovall, one of the two showrunners of Kentuckiana, the Kentucky G.I. Joe show. It's a show that's been going on for a decade, and while this conversation does dip heavily into the 12-inch side of Joe, Steve is a 12-inch collector, but the show is great for 3 3/4, for 6-inch, and for everything in between. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as we did, and I hope to see you in Louisville, Kentucky at the end of July for Kentuckiana.
This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
Back in the day, when Brian Savage had the club going, at one point in time, he had encouraged local divisions to set up of the club. Larry had taken him up on that. You would send something to Brian, and he would send you the addresses of club members in your area. And so Larry got that and sent letters out to everybody. And so we started a local club, and we would meet, you know, one Saturday a month.
That is incredible.
And it went for a while. And then it kind of started slowing down. But while we were doing it, and when we were pretty consistently doing it, I had kind of had the idea and said, you know, it'd be nice if we, because we'd bring things in and swap and trade and do stuff. I said, it'd be nice if we kind of set up like a little show and had dealers set up and whatnot, because basically I was just wanting more stuff to buy. And we talked off and on. And as the club kind of got a little slower, we were all meeting over at Larry's house one day, and he got a calendar out and said, look, if we're going to do this, we just got to pick a date and do it. And so we picked a date and did that first one, which we had 13 tables for that first show. And we let people have the tables for free, and then we let people in for free. And the idea was you have to have the first one so you can start having the second one, because a lot of people will stay away from a first show.
Absolutely.
But if it's a second show, then maybe it's got some legs. And we moved to a different hotel for the second show. And whatnot. And so gradually, really what ended up happening is the other club guys kind of really didn't do a whole lot for the show. So it really just became Larry and I doing everything. And so that's kind of how it became our show.
That's very cool. I didn't know all that. I knew that it had been like officially a show for 11 years, I think.
This is year 10.
10. Okay.
And we're the only show that's run 10 straight years, because we had a show during the COVID year and everybody else took the year off. So we're the longest running G.I. Joe show.
I was there for it. And I don't remember how long I've been coming to your show, but I really didn't know many people. And the Nashville Joe people, they were getting together at Todd's house a couple times a year. And every time he would hit me up and he'd be like, hey, man, you're a G.I. Joe person, so you should show up to this thing. And I'd be like, oh, I'm out of town. And so before he and I became like friends, we became Todd, the guy who was throwing shows at his house, and Jason, the guy who would never show up. It was just because I was traveling a lot at that time. And one day he hit me up and he's like, hey, I'm heading up to Kentuckiana. Are you traveling that weekend? I was like, I am not. So I hopped in the car with him, and I've been every year since. And so I may be describing your show incorrectly. Okay. And if I am, I apologize, and I would love for you to correct me, which is also why I asked about like the job share between you and Larry, because it's always been described to me as your show. But then when I show up, Larry's always running the booth where the money's taken, and you're always running the booth where the toys are sold.
Yeah.
But I've always explained Kentuckiana as a 12-inch show that the small Joes invaded, and now it's a 50-50. And I don't know if that's accurate. I don't even know if that's fair, but that was kind of how it was described to me. And as I started showing up, it is the largest 12-inch show I've ever been to.
Yeah.
But it is half 12-inch and half not 12-inch. And so is that even a fair way to describe your show?
I think that that's fair. When we started it, we kind of came out of the local club, and all the guys in the local club really were 12-inch guys. And so we kind of started it, and we built the show like a show we'd want to go to. And so we built it up, and then, you know, going back, the first thing that really made us pop on people's attention is when we got Greg Brown and Cotswold to come in. And so that was back before Greg owned the company. He was just working for them. And we talked to them and said, hey, we will bring you guys in and set you up. And so then when people started taking notice, oh, hey, you got Cotswold as a show? And then the next big name was when Ace came along, you know, because then people know Ace. Right. And I think from the 3 3/4 side, one of the guys that was in the local club was more of a 3 3/4 guy. And he really started working on Aaron with Roma. And then when we got Roma down, that was kind of, you know, people knew them.
That's funny because I was always a very quiet collector on my own, doing my own thing, really didn't know anybody. And Todd's been in the community longer than I have. So he knew a lot of people that I didn't. And so when he and I started hanging out more, which coincides with your show, we realized that everyone I knew in the community, he had no idea who they were, and vice versa. And now we all know the same people. You know, our world has shrunk because we hang out. Your show was fundamental or instrumental in the cementing of our friendship. Certainly not the formation of it, but certainly in the cementing of it. Because of him, I met you, I met Steve Druin and Dana White.
Dana was the one that pulled in Roma.
Okay. I met that whole contingent of collectors by coming up there with Todd. And Todd would come up. His goal was to sell enough that he didn't go home broke.
Yeah.
And through your show, he went from enjoying to sell to buy to loving to sell. Your show has been a lot of fun for both of us in that regard. And I wish he was joining us tonight, but instead it'll be just the normal Joel and I and you.
It's been an interesting process as it's grown over the time. And now I've got so many people that know me, you know, and so many, and to the point where I can't remember everybody all the time. But,
you know, the other thing that makes Kentuckiana special to me, you have your own reasons why it's special. But for me, your show is special because when I started bringing A with me to shows regularly, I'd taken to shows before, but to travel with Todd and I and to go to shows regularly and to give him the freedom to move about and not be, you know, the kid holding onto dad's hand. Your show was, you know, it's the right size hotel and show floor. And I knew enough of the vendors in the room that it felt safe.
Yeah.
And very quickly, you guys started calling him Little Ace. Larry was handing him stickers and things. You were pulling me over to talk about him. Everybody fell in love with A. And because of A, I think I like you guys like me a little more because you like him. You know, after a couple times there, it was like, all right, man, you're ready for the big show. We'll take you to Joe Fest because it's a larger floor and the hotel's a little further away, but it's still safe. I still know everybody. But you had to prove yourself at a show that's only 2.5 hours from home, not six. You had to prove yourself at a show that the hotel elevator is 5 feet from the show floor.
Yeah.
And to me, like it was awesome because you guys made him so welcome and you made him feel important and safe that he was already one of us. But he's now more one of us, you know.
And it kind of goes back to where I say, you know, we tried to make it as a show that we'd like to go to. So, we liked going to shows where people felt comfortable with everybody and, you know, like that. And so, you know, we wanted people to feel that same way. And it's funny you say that because the other thing that I've kind of noticed over the year, I get a lot of vendors. This is the first time they've ever set up at a show and they choose to set up at ours. You know, then they come back and whatnot. But, yeah, we've had a lot of people that tell me, you know, this is my first time ever selling. Actually, I had some this year because I got a waiting list right now, which is probably going to make me do something I don't want to do next year, which I really don't want to do. But I may end up doing it just because we've got so many people wanting in.
I like that your show is growing in that naturalistic way that every year I've been, you've been a little bit bigger, but not.
Well, some of it's on purpose. Because, you know, we've looked at it and we said, you know, if it gets too big, it's hard to manage and hard to handle. and you have to have more people to do it. And sometimes getting people you can count on is a little harder than it should be. So we've tried to keep it at a size that we feel comfortable we can manage.
And a size that remains like very intimate.
Yeah.
Even though like your show now is much larger than the first year I went, the intimacy is not lost.
How many rooms did we have the first year you went? Was it just the one big room or did we have some of the other ones opened up?
The first year I went was the first time or the time before. It was the first time you did the second room, I believe.
Okay.
Or maybe it was that was the second time I was there. But it was very, you know, that second room was not full. You guys had a little bit of growing pain with like how to put signage up properly because it wasn't full, because it was your first time having that second room. And then a year later, it was a little like that room was full. And then a couple of years later, you had a third room that wasn't full. And now that third room is packed. And now you guys are in a whole new space. And every year that I come, I'm also trying to get kind of the way you've been slowly growing your vendor space and your workload. I'm trying to do the same to get people to show up. And January for Winterfest was the first time that I got Joel to come out to Kentuckiana, which, Joel, how far of a drive is that for you?
It's about 9 hours.
Wow.
I've been to 2 Winterfests last year and this year. And then I am coming down at the end of the month for Kentuckiana proper, which I'm really excited about. It's kind of been that thing where I'm just a little bit too far away from everything. And, you know, I make the trip to Joe Fest. And then luckily it's a double-edged sword because it was at the beginning of June, which means I had less time to prepare. but it gave me a much bigger gap between Joe Fest and Kentucky. I flew down to the Winterfest. I brought X amount of money. I gave myself a budget of like less than half of what I brought, and I stayed on budget, and it was awesome.
Well, good.
It was kind of that like test, you know, where I was like, I pretty much have everything I want outside of like the gems and the rare pieces that like don't show up that often. And I was like, you know, I really just want to go and hang out anyways. And I can just be like, I've got money to spend if I run into something that I need. But like, I need to prioritize like the hang because I've got a couple friends that well, you know, the Anything Joe's guys. This is my chance to hang out with them. I shifted the priority level to significantly higher because, I mean, the 2 Winterfests I've been to were awesome. Everyone is hanging out.
Since Joel brought up purchasing, the thing that I've noticed with Joe shows these days, rarity is important because all of us have been here forever. And there's only so many snow jobs and breakers that you can buy. Now, you're going to have to answer this one, Steve, because I don't know. But on the small Joe side of things, I have seen some incredibly rare things at Kentuckiana, things I've seen nowhere else. This past Winterfest, we saw a sealed no paint on the mask Steel Brigade. I've seen a lot of them. I've never seen one sealed. That's just kind of one example, but there's a ton of rare Star Wars stuff there. There's rare MOTU. I picked up Mattelmen out of Spain, which very uncommon. But from the 12-inch side, I'm assuming that your show has also like that level of rarity, or you guys have been, 12-inch has been in the collector market long enough where is that even important anymore?
No, there's some rare stuff that shows up, which is always fun. You know, you never know exactly what's going to come in and who's going to have what. And that's what makes it fun to, you know, as I'm setting the dealers up and seeing them unpack and kind of, you know, keeping that eye open. Is there something in there I want to make sure that I come back and take a first crack at? And I think that, you know, the I would say the past 3 years, I've added some really nice, harder to find pieces from the show.
That's awesome. So I don't know if you and Joel have met, but certainly this July, if you guys haven't, I'll make sure to do a proper introduction. You know, we're kind of 3 generations of Joe here because you come from the 12-inch world. I am solidly 82 to 90 was my, you know, childhood range. And then Joel comes from that middle years of G.I. Joe. So it's kind of fun to have all of us here. Now, Joel is a 4-inch collector. He doesn't collect the O-ring. I do not collect 12-inch until your show. I had met Ace once before. I knew who he was because of his reputation. And I bought the 64 Sailor for my dad just because he was in the Navy. And he never had G.I. Joe as a kid. The very next time I saw him at your show with him and you and Chuck and Scott, all of you guys grabbed Alexander. And the next thing I know, we're bringing home a bag of 12-inch Joes. Before that moment, I used to equate 12-inch G.I. Joe to me the same way as I equate like Greek and the Germanics to English, right? Like I know where my language comes from, but I don't speak it. It's very pretty. Look at the ruins over there. And that's how I looked at 12-inch. Very pretty. It's really neat. Look at the older stuff over there that I don't mess with. And very quickly, I went from like two figures and one of Chuck's custom boxes to, I think, like 90 12-inch figures in the house now.
Wow.
Yeah, that's your guys' fault. One may say it's my fault for not telling A no, but let's be fair, it's your guys' fault. But I've learned a lot. You know, I picked up DeSimone's book and I picked up DePriest's book.
Both of those gentlemen are going to be at the show this year.
I've never met DeSimone. So that's awesome. Now from my community, the big plug is Ron Rudat's going to be at your show this year.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that too. And he actually has some roots back in the 12-inch. When he started, he did some art for a couple of he did some art for one of the 12-inch vehicles. Back in the 12-inch days, they would put comic books in some of the sets, and he did some of the art to some of the comic books. He was at the Dallas-Fort Worth show last month, and I talked to him, showed him the picture of the comic book, and first he said, "Yeah, I don't think I did that." And I'm like, "Well, there's your signature on it." He's like, "Oh, yeah." He said, "That was when I first started. It was in the art department." Well, we advertise him. We're going to advertise him for the 12-inch folks, too, and let them know, hey, he did the Seawolf comic book and some other things, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Not just the Cobra logo and all the 3 3/4 designs.
So at this point, I consider Ron and Jenny friends. They love Alexander. He loves them.
They're great people.
But I didn't know this about him. You know, that's something that's not really talked about on our floor. So I am excited that you're dropping a little bit extra knowledge for us. DePriest has been to your show before.
Yes.
DePriest brings an interesting mix of like Joe Club exclusives and weird shit from the 50s and 60s that I just... Because of your show, we got into Major Matt Mason. DePriest has brought a lot of Matt Mason. And in fact, that's how him and Alexander first started talking, was he walked over and was asking Daryl about some Matt Mason stuff that he had in the case. He is genuinely one of the sweetest people. So I'm excited to meet DeSimone because I've never met him. He doesn't come out this way much anymore, does he?
No, he told me this is his first time doing something outside of California in ages.
This is why people should not sleep on Louisville, Kentucky. You guys have an amazing toy mall.
Which, by the way, they did expand it. They opened an expansion to it on July 1st. They took in the store next to them.
Well, I'm not sad to see that store go, but I am glad that they expanded. That's great. But Louisville has other great toy shops. They have some great comic shops. They have a couple good game shops. We always take the time to go out and support your local shops. We're supporting you and your show. We're supporting the vendors that come up to your show, but we're also supporting our own hobbies and the local shops. I think this year we might even get a little further north before we come down to Louisville and we check out Greg and Natalie's shop.
Boston Found Toys in Seymour, Indiana. Yeah, very nice.
In the past, What's on Joe Mind and Full Force used to frequent your show, but they've all moved. And now you have Joel and I coming to your show, plus Anything Joe's and Podcasts from the Pit. So your show has always attracted the mouthier sides of our community.
I will add, you know, because you talked earlier about, you know, hanging out with folks and whatnot. One of the things that some of the people told me about after Winterfest was, you know, we kind of missed being in the new building because at the hotel, we had kind of the lobby where people kind of hang out. And so what we've done is we've taken one of the extra rooms, and we're going to just kind of make it. We're going to have some tables and some chairs in there. It's not going to be, you know, really plush or anything, but it is a little room where people can go just hang out and chat if they want to, and just kind of step away from the show and relax.
That's excellent. That's excellent. The old hotel that you were at was great for that lobby. They had the restaurant lobby,
yeah,
the restaurant and then the lobby. And we would be out there till, I don't know, midnight, 1 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having a few drinks, having a few laughs. It is intimate. It is lovely. It is a great community.
But I've told people at this point, that's really where we go to the shows. It's not looking for that one rare piece or whatever. If it's there, that's great. But it's more to see your buddies that you see once or twice or three times a year and to kind of hang out and talk with them. And then last year after the setup at Winterfest, a group of us went to there's a little restaurant right next to the convention center called the Fish House. And they had a little room in the back that we took. Daryl was telling us about, you know, pitching projects to the Hasbro board.
Oh, wow.
And then Greg Atore was there, and he was talking about when he would come in and how he would pitch things and how nobody wanted to go after him because he was so animated and whatnot. And it was just fascinating, you know, hearing the inside stuff of how things went and whatnot. And it's always good fun.
I think it's lovely that even after this many years, we can still learn things about this hobby,
yeah,
and about the business behind the hobby. That's really cool. One thing I like is that where you guys are at, there's two hotels where the parking lot touches the show. So there's more space for people to come and stay.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the hotel being sold out and having to stay across town and taking Ubers. You got two full hotels right there on premises.
And lots of parking.
Tons of parking. So it really is a show that you're going to find the good shit, but you're also going to have plenty of communion. This is your first summer show in the new spot. How is the new spot for you? I mean, I know for a shopper, it's larger and it's all one room, so it's great. But how is it for you? How is it for your team?
Oh, we loved it. I mean, I've loved having everybody in one room. The folks that run the convention center are pleasant to deal with. Not that the folks at the hotel were not pleasant. They were very pleasant too. From a standpoint of the actual setup, the new convention center, they'll set the tables up for us and take the tables down, and they supply all the tables. It just makes it so much easier on our part. We'll get out there early Friday morning, make sure the setup's the way we want it, put the vendors' names on the tables, and then kind of just wait for the people to roll in. So it makes it really nice. It's a little further away from my house, but that's not the worst thing in the world. Close enough that we can still set up our booth and bring as much stuff as we want. It met a lot of things that people complain sounds a little harsh. That people, the things that they said, boy, we like the old hotel, but we wish it had this, we wish it had that. And one of the big things when people always wanted was, concessions at the hotel. And so this one, it has a concession stand that's open, that's right there. So you don't even have to, if you don't want to, you don't even have to go out to get something to eat. If you did, there's plenty of stuff around there. And if you're a dealer, because I've had this happen to us before when we set up at shows, and you forgot something, like you forgot your shelves or something, there's a Walmart just across the street that you can go to and get anything that you need. Everything about the location is ideal. The only thing that I wish it had a hotel connected, because I do like that walking out of your room and just kind of walking down and seeing what's going on and whatnot.
I do too.
But now it's just walking across the parking lot.
I mean, there's no perfect spot, right? And so you're balancing the two things. And I think this is a great balance.
I do too. And it's a good location. I think if we'd started at this location, because it's a little bit further away from the airport, it might have been a little harder to get people coming out there. But I think once we built up the quality of the show and people, know what we're going to deliver, they come. And heck, Winterfest, that was our biggest Winterfest crowd and biggest number of vendors at Winterfest ever for his first one.
That's lovely. I like that.
We were blown away by it. It was funny because it was a little slower on the Friday night preview, and we thought, okay, well, maybe it's the first one. But then on Saturday morning and everything, it just people just kept flowing in.
One of the things that you have to consider with your new spot, because it's a larger space, you can have more people and it will look less full.
That's true.
Those old rooms had a small ceiling and they were cramped, and so could have half the people and it was elbow to elbow. So it is really nice that you have room to move and breathe, to shop, to hang out and talk without being on top of people in the new spot. I love it.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think complaining is necessarily super harsh with what I've noticed from your vendor crowd. There was one or two people that caused a scene a few years back, but over the course of the last several years that I've been, the people that are complaining are doing it out of a sense of love for your show and wanting the best for your show, not just sort of a selfish screaming at you.
I guess I'd say it's more constructive criticism than complaints.
Yeah. You have such a refined and great group of very regular vendors that hang with you now twice a year. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah. When we started the winter show, and that was Larry's idea to do the winter show, I wasn't sure how it was going to go and if everybody would want to come again. But then so I said, well, I'll send the invite out to the vendors. And then everybody's like, yeah. Yep, we'll do it. We'll do it.
What else are we going to do in January?
Yeah.
And January in Louisville is a roll of the dice. Is it going to snow or is it going to be sunny?
Well, yeah, that was the funny thing, because I told some people, and I think Ace was the one person I was talking to, and I said, well, you know, a lot of times we don't really get our snow until late February or March. And he said, yeah, but I'm coming down from Minnesota, so I have to worry about, you know, the snow I'm going to run into there. And I'm like, well, Ace, I didn't think about that because I just got to drive 10 miles. You know, down the expressway, and I'm there. Yeah, I guess that would be a problem.
It is nice though, because the timing of that show is kind. There isn't a lot going on hobby wise because most people save stuff for summer, so it's way easy to plan. And it gets me out of New York in January, which even when it's cold in Louisville, it's not Western New York cold. So it's a great treat for me. Like last year, it was pretty cold and nasty. And then when I, you know, got down there, it was, I don't even think I needed a jacket at all. So do you guys have your like theme for the show, or is that not announced? Is that generally waited until you roll in and see? Because remember 2 years ago, I bought the shirt, grabbed the pin. I think it was like a snowcat pin that you had made. But is there like a theme for this year's?
We've done a set for the a 12-inch set for the show, and the theme on that is because one of the big sets in the 12-inch era was called Secret Mission to Spy Island, and they did a couple of references to that throughout the time of the adventure team. So we kind of came up, and this is something I'd been wanting to do for a long time. I originally wanted to do it and tie it into some other shows. But that never really worked. So we said, okay, well, we'll do a set and we'll do an invasion of Spy Island. And then because we have a lot of our vendors that make sets and make stuff, we'll talk to them and have them make a part to go along with it. So we'll have the main set that we have, and then we'll have these add-on sets that you could either buy by themselves or you could buy it all and make one really, really big convention set.
That's awesome.
So Cotswold Collectibles is going to have a set that they're pulling together. That's going to be a part of the invasion. Matt Stevenson with Matt Squatch is making a set that will go with it. And Carol Ashby, who does wetsuits and stuff, is making a scuba portion with it. And so we'll have a table where we'll have all the sets that you can get and tell you, you know, which vendors have them or whatnot. But it all kind of ties into that theme of Spy Island.
That's fantastic. I know I have a couple of your convention sets, you know, set of clothing, some gear.
We're going to have a figure with it this time.
Oh, very cool.
Hey, all right. I like the sound of that.
One of Cotswold's figures or more of a vintage?
It's a Cotswold body with, since I'm also doing the Super Joe with Jason, it's the 12-inch Super Joe head on a Cotswold body.
The Super Joe with Jason, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk to you about that, but I had forgotten to do so at Joe Fest because I'm a bit manic when there's a lot of people for me to chat with.
I can understand that.
What's going on with that? How is that? Is Jason going to be here? I know the Kickstarter's going on right now for the comic, but...
So do you know about Super Joe and where Super Joe falls in on the G.I. Joe scale and whatnot?
Yeah. So Super Joe was the 8-inch or 9-inch Joe. They all fall apart, but they have the really neat six-legged dinosaur thing. And some of the vehicles were Adventure Team, but re-stickered for Adventurer.
Yeah, you get a fair understanding though. Yeah. So at the end of the 12-inch line, they came out with Super Joe, and Big Jim at the time was out, and he was 9 inches, and Mego figures were 8 inches. So Hasbro made Super Joe 8.5 inches. So he kind of fell in between the two.
Cut the difference.
They did a big push in 77 for Super Joe, and a little less push in 78. And then also in 78, Kenner kind of came out with Star Wars and killed everything. There was no Joe in 79. They were made with rubber joints, and the rubber joints didn't hold up over time, and they fell apart. And so you could get them really cheap. Super Joe was at the end of my, you know, I didn't have Super Joe as a kid. I was a 12-inch collector. I didn't care for Super Joe when it came out because, it was smaller. It didn't really fit in. Some of the pieces, they overlapped from the 12-inch pieces they used in the Super Joe line. And one of them is a 12-inch Joe had an airplane called the Pursuit Craft. They repurposed it for Super Joe. To make it fit Super Joe, they put a seatbelt in there to hold him in because he was a little smaller. which is always, and it was funny because we were down at Joe Fest a couple years ago, and a guy had one, had a Super Joe Pursuit Craft on his shelf, and it said it was complete. And I was joking with Greg Brown. And I said, I bet it doesn't have the seatbelt. And Greg said, why don't you ask him? And I said, no, if I ask him and it has a seatbelt, I'm going to have to buy it. And so Greg's like, hey, does that have the seatbelt in it? And the guy pulled it down, and sure enough, it did. So I ended up having to buy it because you just don't find the seatbelt that often.
I remember that moment. I remember that conversation.
And I had flown down to Joe Fest that year. So I had to get, because I knew Matt Stevenson was coming up to our show and had driven to Joe Fest. So I had Matt take the Pursuit Craft back to Texas and then drive it back to Louisville when he came up. Now Matt knew that I bought it for the seatbelt, but he also knew that I took the seatbelt out and flew it home.
Yeah, I was there for some of that conversation, and that's probably where I learned that that vehicle had been repurposed, because I wouldn't have learned that elsewhere. And that's very neat. Super Joe is one of the pieces of Joe I don't have that I would like something from it.
Well, and the way I got into Super Joe is, like I said, there's a couple pieces that they repurposed, and there's a rare Adventure Team set that has a raft and a motor on it, and there's a yoke that holds the motor in that they also use for Super Joe for a raft. And there was a lot on eBay that had that in it, and I bought it thinking that I would take that and just, you know, sell the rest of the Super Joe stuff. But when I got it, it was about 80% of everything they made. And I'm like, I can't break this collection up. I got to complete it. and at that time, you could complete it pretty cheaply.
Sure.
And then going to a show, just a generic toy show, somebody had one that they'd put back together. And the guy told me how he did it. And so then I started putting them back together. And then I started the 3D Super Joe site. You know, like Carson had the 3D Joes, and Matt had the 3D, vintage 3D Joes. And so then I built a 3D Super Joe site.
I didn't know that was yours. Okay.
Yeah, that's not. And so I put the instructions out there of how to put them together. And so then we started seeing the price of Super Joe start going up, because now you could put him together and you could put him in stuff. And then back in the convention in Florida in 17, I was talking to a gentleman named David Lee. About, because he produced some Mego scale figures, about making joints, replacement joints for the Super Joe figures. And we kind of talked off and on. And then he was partners with Jason in a couple of projects. And eventually he said, well, Jason's who you need to talk to. So then Jason and I started talking about doing, you know, replacement hands and joints. And then Jason said, what if we just remade the figure? And I said, I'm game for that. And so that's kind of how it did. We started remaking the figure. Then we looked and found out that Hasbro hadn't kept the trademark. So we got the trademark to Super Joe. And then I guess the first figures, I got them last December. So that was, from 17 to 22, it took to actually get everything done and produced and finally out there. And then the Kickstarter is out there because Austin Howe, who does Power Comics, had come to us and said, hey, I'd like to license Super Joe and do a comic on him. And we kind of talked to him with that and said, sure, let's do it. So it's got five more days to go, and it's probably gonna reach its goal.
That's awesome.
So that's kind of neat, seeing the Super Joe characters in a comic book form.
So you went from hell no, not my Joe, to let's do it all and remake it.
Remake it and own the trademark, you know, so it's
perfect.
Have you crossed over into any like 4-inch stuff?
Yeah, I have. It's funny because I did start picking up the classified G.I. Joes. So I started picking those up because they're neat, and the thing that I think is cool is them, they photograph really well. You can set them up, pose them, and photograph them, and they do well. And then just recently, I guess within the last year or so, because my brother runs an auction house, and a lot of stuff came through the auction house, and so I could see it and bid on it and whatnot. I decided to get the 82 line, you know, just that first year with the straight arms while he still looked military and whatnot. And so I've fallen down that rabbit hole. I keep telling myself, that's it. I'm just gonna 82 and you know, keep that and not go further. But people tell me that probably won't happen.
So did you see that Fun Publication Collectors Club did 4 Adventure Team homage figures?
Yes.
In spirit, similar to your Super Joe thing, where I got one of the club's Adventure Team figures, and it kind of spiraled me into this, like, obsession where I was, like, basically kitbashing a bunch of 4-inch figures to make my own Adventure Team. I built my own version of the Spy Island set. Tying into that side of 12-inch Joe really, like, gave me really good, refreshing breath a handful of years ago that, like, I kind of really needed to keep me as excited and gung-ho as I was with collecting. A lot of fun to find anything I could find in the 118 scale that could work as, like, a cryptid, gorilla, or animals. Anything that I could, like, you know, twist into my own one-to-one version of, you know, Adventure Team. And then it kind of got even more out of hand where I'm, like, adding all sorts of anything sci-fi as I'm mixing into my own version. I really liked what the club did with those 4 figures. And I really, there's a couple 12-inch figures that the Collectors Club did. Like, I really wish I would have got their Mike Powers, and I passed on it when it was on sale.
Yeah.
At like 7-8 o'clock at night. And then, like, I woke up the next morning and was like, I just got to order it. And it was already gone because the sale was so good that everybody scooped them up. And I know they did one specific Adventure Team, kind of their own concept. Maybe he was a time traveler. I don't remember, but he had like a streak of white hair.
Kind of a Doctor Who.
Yes. Yeah. And that set is really gorgeous. And I've never seen one in real life. And I always kind of snoop around, especially when I go to a show that has a little bit more 12 inch. But I feel like at that point in, you know, and this is, you know, where you're at, where you've been doing the 12 inch stuff so long that when you buy stuff, you're just buying it for yourself. No one's buying those sets and then playing with them and being like, yeah, I think I'm over this. Like, it's, yeah, we're buying these sets because it's all we can get and they're cool and neat and they're living in my collection.
Well, and the other thing was, honestly, at the time that those came out in the club, from the club standpoint, the 12-inch membership was dropping and they just didn't produce as many of them.
Yes.
Brian and the guys were producing a lot more of the 3 3/4 stuff and a lot less of the 12-inch. So that makes it, those sets kind of even harder to find.
I still, every once in a while, I'll search on eBay for that Mike Powers, and I had a shot to get him for such a decent price, and I'll never live that down, because I know that even in my wildest find at a show, I'll never find it remotely close to the price that I, like, let it slide through my fingers.
Yeah, a lot of the club stuff is escalated in price. Now, you know, the further we get from the club's closing, the higher it gets.
Absolutely.
I love Bullet Man. I love Mike Powers.
Bullet Man was the last 12-inch G.I. Joe I got as a kid, and I still have my Bullet Man.
Did you come into G.I. Joe with military or with Adventure Team?
I was born in 68, and so G.I. Joe in 69 switched to Adventure, and in 1970 became the Adventure Team. So after my dad passed away, we were going through slides, and so I actually saw the slide for the first Christmas, and so the first G.I. Joe I got as a kid was an Adventure Team G.I. Joe in 1970.
Oh man! But
while we were playing with them, you know, there was still enough out there from the military side. So, you know, what we were getting in the stores was the Adventure Team. Another thing, my dad was he liked model railroad stuff, and he would go on his lunch breaks. He would go to like Goodwill and Salvation Army and stuff like that, looking for stuff for his hobby, and he would pick up stuff and bring it back for us. So we would get some of the military stuff that had been out for a while. You know, he'd come home and bring us that. So we would get some of that too. So we had, you know, because I got an older brother who's about 2.5 years older than me, and so, you know, we had some of the military. We had, but it was kind of a mixture. Uh-huh. We were in that cross. Yeah, so sometimes we'd get the Adventure Team ones, but we would dress them up in the military stuff, and, you know, they'd be soldiers. And then sometimes they'd be out hunting for the lost mummy or whatever. and doing other things.
That's incredible. I love that.
Yeah.
I never had 12 inch as a kid, just G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Wars. But then, you know, Joel, your experience you've talked about many times is you had my G.I. Joes out of yard sales, I guess the same way, Steve, you had the military Joes out of Goodwills and yard sales.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many lines crossed here. That's really neat. Did you ever have like a dark period where you hit puberty, you started the chase and you left Joe behind and had to come back to it as an adult? Or did you keep this with you this whole time?
No, I did. I grew up, so to speak, for a period of time. And, you know, and it is funny because as a kid, we had a lot of different toys. We had the G.I. Joe, we had the Migos, which were the superheroes. And then we had the Johnny West, which was the Western figures. And that for some reason, I guess at yard sales or giving them away to other family or whatever, we got rid of everything but our G.I. Joes. Now, I got rid of the vehicles and that, but I still have, four of my original G.I. Joe figures. For some reason, I knew to keep those. And then I think it was back in 94 when they had the 30th anniversary of G.I. Joe, and they had a big convention up in New York on the Intrepid. And it got publicity, and they started making the 30th anniversary G.I. Joes. That kind of got me back into the collecting. And then I guess shortly after that is when eBay opened up and you could just get everything that you didn't have as a kid, didn't know existed. But I think the first show I went to was in 95 when they did a show in Chicago. And so I went to that and did a couple of shows and then kind of got out of the shows, but was still collecting. And then went back to Brian's show, I think the first Kansas City show. And then only missed one of Brian's shows in that whole run.
So you got back in right there in the 93, 94, 95 era, and you've been in since.
Yeah, and I think part of it was when they did the first 12-inch G.I. Joe, the Duke figure that was a Target one. I think I remember my mom calling me up and telling me, hey, Target's going to have a 12-inch G.I. Joe. And I think she even went out and got it for me. and so, you know, it's like, oh, G.I. Joe's back. That's pretty cool.
I think it's interesting because you're only like 7 years older than I am. And yet our Joe differences are so vast. I'm just 7 years younger than you. But when I was seven and getting into G.I. Joe, like, there was no way that someone was going to give me a 12-inch Joe. Right. There was no way because boys don't play with dolls. Right.
Yeah.
And so when A brought home the first G.I. Joes from your show and he's on the floor playing and he's having a blast, he's never been invested with that kind of bullshit mentality.
Yeah.
And so he's like, Dad, get on the floor and play. And I sit down on the floor and I'm like, I'm playing with the Joe and I'm like, oh, this is fun. He's like, oh, change the outfits. And I was like, I don't do that. And it took me like a couple minutes to be like, that's the dumbest shit. That is somebody else's nonsense programming. I set that aside. I changed this dude's outfit and I was immediately like cleansed of all of that. And I've not looked back and I love it.
I'll give you a little programming there. Their uniforms, Barbie and Ken have outfits. G.I. Joe has uniforms.
To me, it's all semantics. I don't care if you want to call it an action figure, a doll, clothing, outfit, uniform. It was someone else's programming that I was allowing to stop me from having fun. And as soon as I realized that was nonsense, set that aside, changed the uniform on this Joe, hanging out with Alexander on the floor, I have not looked back. And I will kit out a 12-inch fast. I love it. I adore it. It's so much fun.
I will add that when the when G.I. Joe did come back in 82 with the 3¾ line, the one painted hair G.I. Joe that I had as a kid had blonde hair. So when the 3¾ came out and my mom bought me a short fuse because he had blonde hair like the old G.I. Joe I had. And so she had got that for me. And so I did have one 3¾ G.I. Joe as a kid. And I still have him. So I have my, four or five of my original 12-inch and my one original 3¾.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, yeah, you're sitting there right at that 14 age, still getting toys. I love that. That's fantastic.
I had one of the mid-2000s 12-inch figures. I wouldn't be able to tell you any of his specifics other than he was like, he had full camo face paint. And he came with an M16 that was black and green. And then somewhere along the line, someone gave me an Action Man from that relaunch of the 12-inch Action Man that had a functioning parachute.
Oh, yeah.
And I threw that thing off the roof of my house thousands of times. And I just remember wishing that I had like a whole squad of guys with the parachutes, because it was so much work to go upstairs, go climb through the window, make sure someone was home, or like, you know, sneak out on the roof, throw the thing off, climb back to the window, run back down the stairs. You know, it was, and then, you know, obviously when you're a kid, you think you're slick and sneaky, but like you hear, you know, as an adult, you're like, yeah, I don't know what's going on, but someone's clearly on the roof. You know, I might have gotten two tosses in before I got the, you know, I had to put that on hold. But I loved that I built a ton of storylines around. And he was like the only one I had for a while, was the full camo one, which was like a bummer, because I would just be like out in the woods behind my house with this singular G.I. Joe fighting, you know, imaginary figures. But I grew up in the middle years, still O-ring construction era, and I had a decent little collection of those. But then also still wound up with a couple of 12-inch guys. In my current collection, I have a couple of 12-inch guys. And I have my original childhood collection of the middle year stuff, but I have legitimately no nostalgia for collecting those toys. I just jumped into the modern era in 2007. Well, a little bit later than 2007, but that's when that line was introduced. And that's what I collect.
Funny enough, like all three of us can get all of our stuff at your show, which...
Yeah, that's very true.
You have Marauder Gunrunners there every time, which is great.
Yeah, we love having them there. They're great guys.
Toy department shows up. You know, and then all of your local people show up, right? Like Terry Ruin and Greg and Natalie, and everybody supports your show. You support everybody's hobby. You guys do like a Friday night preview, and then you do a Saturday.
Yeah, so we do, you know, the dealers start setting up around 2, I think. And then from 5 to 8, we'll do a Friday night preview for the people that want to get in, you know, really early. And then they can get, with the Friday night preview price, you get early bird on Saturday. And then we have the full day on Saturday. And then, and this is part of where it goes back to setting up a show like we wanted to go to. I liked being able to go back home on Sunday so I didn't have to take Monday off work. You know? I only had to miss one day, Friday. And so that's why we said, you know, and then also, honestly, as a dealer, I don't think any show that I've set up at that's had a Saturday and a Sunday, the Sunday's been a really big sales day. You know, everything that's going to sell for you is going to happen on Friday night and Saturday. That way people can kind of relax and take a pleasant trip home on Sunday. I think what we used to do when we were at the other places, I'd even go back over on Sunday morning and meet up with some folks, and we would have, you know, like a nice leisurely breakfast before everybody started heading out and heading home.
I know we've done a few times where, because we're close enough to Louisville that we usually leave Saturday night instead of staying that extra night.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID, we need to get back to this habit. We haven't gotten back to it when that Cardinal Grill or whatever it was shut down during COVID. But we would always, right after the show Saturday, we'd all go and grab dinner together. And there'd be, you know, 15, 20 of us just eating dinner. And I miss that.
Well, there's a couple other things that we used to do. And I don't know that either one of them is going to be able to happen this year. But there were times that I would have folks come over to my house and see my collection, which, you know, has like all the 12-inch and stuff and whatnot. And then the past couple of years, since my brother owns an auction house and took it over, and it has a big warehouse attached to it, and so we have a bunch of stuff that we sell in that warehouse. So we had folks come over and just kind of walk through and see the warehouse and see all the stuff that was there, and
that's incredible.
You know, that was kind of fun. That was fun because that was one where Ace came over and gave me a hug, and he said, "Thanks. At least now I know somebody else has as much as I do." I'm not the only one that has a warehouse full of this stuff.
Ace is very welcoming to non-12-inch people.
Great ambassador for the hobby.
Yes. There are so many others in your cadre of guys that are as well, men and women both, that are as well. But he's kind of the name that everybody knows. He's over there with the long hair and the hats, and so he stands out. But I find, you know, everyone that I've met through your show has been just very lovely. I recommend your show to everyone. And I know we've had people fly in from California and Canada and all over the place.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a guy this year call me up asking about the show, and he's up in Calgary, I think he said he was going to be coming from. And the funny thing is, people ask me, is it a good show? And I'm like, well, I've run the show, so I'm going to be a little biased. But yeah, I think it's a really good show. And I always tell people, you can go out to our website, although I don't think I've updated it for last year, and look, and we've got pictures of the prior shows, so you can kind of see what it looks like and what kind of stuff's there. And so this guy had done it, and then he sent me another email afterwards and said, yes, I'm definitely coming this year. He said, it looks really like it'll be a fun show.
I've heard people say they don't want to come because there's no Sunday, and then they show up and they're like, oh shit, I'm going to come every year. And you're like, yeah, I told you, it's fun. It is certainly a show that I have been advocating for. And you and I have talked about doing this for a couple of years. So I appreciate that you've taken the time to let me invade your evening, let Joel invade your evening, and us, you know, hopefully provide some value to you through this.
Absolutely.
And I know just recently you did a live YouTube with, I don't remember the name of the person, but he's a 12-inch guy.
Paul Knapp.
If people want to hear more from you, they can always go there. One of the things that I find really funny about your show, coming from Nashville, is how many people are like, oh, it's so far away. And I'm like, it's Louisville, one. You can almost throw a rock from Nashville and hit Louisville, or vice versa, I guess. The funnier part is that every time I come to Louisville, I hang out with Paul Nordstrom, who lives 15 minutes from me, and we do not hang out here. You know, until health kind of took him out of the game, I used to hang out with Villis out of Paducah, Matt Brown and Steve Druin, Dana White, like all of these people, like I see them at your show twice a year. It is lovely. And I love the people that you have surrounded yourself with your show and are supporting you every time they come. It's easy for me to shout out, you know, Brian Kaufman and Chris Neal with Toy Department, or shout out Aaron with Roma, because I see them multiple times a year. They're 3¾ guys. We're friends. But this other group, I know strictly because I come to your show. It's quite lovely. I'm very excited to get up to Seymour and see the new shop.
It's very nice. We stopped up there. I think we were going up to the Kane County Toy Show the weekend that they were opening up, and we stopped by to see them. And yeah, it's nice.
I mean, they're such lovely people anyway. Although I will never admit that to their face. Instead, I'll just give them hell. But I'm really excited that you are bringing DeSimone and Rudat. That is mind-blowing to me.
The show is just, you know, people getting together and having a good time.
The show really is a bunch of people getting together and having a good time. I mean, Todd sold it to me as, hey, we're going to sell some toys so that we can afford to buy some toys. And then the next thing I know, like, it's so much more than that for Destro's Toy Den and for me bringing Alexander. And, you know, I didn't know you. I didn't know Larry. You know, and now, like, I get excited when I see that you guys are coming to Joe Fest, because now it's like we see each other and hang out three times a year now. And Druin and I have talked many, many times about we need to, like, get the crews together and, like, meet in Bowling Green an hour each. Yeah. You know, and we never do it. We always get busy. We always forget. I appreciate what you guys are doing at Kentuckiana. I don't know if I've ever told you this story, Steve, but I have told Joel. I don't know if I've said it on here, but I've told him privately. The first time I came to Kentuckiana, I'm walking through that lobby area where Larry has the booth set up where you buy tickets. There's couches on the window and there's some couches. Now you guys have vendors in that area because you guys were growing, but back then, you only had one room, or maybe it was your first year of the second room. So there were still a bunch of chairs along the outside wall of the main room. And I'm walking past, and there's a bunch of guys that are older than me, and someone has a 12-inch figure that has, like, see-through, and there's, like, you can see blood in it. I don't know what the figure is. I've seen it a few times. I know you know what it is.
Yeah, Pulsar.
And he's showing it to the group, and they're all talking about it, and he's, you know, and they're just going nuts. And I stopped and I start staring. And then I'm realizing, like, there is no difference. Cause I was always told, like, when I started showing up at Joe shows, be like, oh, the 12 inch and the small Joes don't get along. And I was like, there's no difference between us. There's none. The only difference between 12 inch Joes and small Joes is inches. We do the same goddamn thing. And it filled me with so much joy. I was very excited. And that's when I fell in love with your show. It was first time being there. It's Saturday. And I'm watching a bunch of like me 7 years or 8 years in the future doing the same shit I do now. And I fell in love with your show at that moment.
Good. That's a good story.
And then I've been bugging Joel about it ever since.
So now when somebody asks me, is it a good show, I should reference them over to you.
Hey, there you go.
Well, I'm biased, but you can talk to him.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
The main set that I'm doing is it's going to have one figure. It's going to have a uniform for him. It's going to have two uniforms for because it's in invading Spy Island. We're going to have two uniforms for the security guards at Spy Island, and you can get your own figures and put in that. And then it's got a radar tower, which is what the purpose is. He's going there to knock out that radar tower. It's got some stuff that Brad Curry, who's Beactive Toys, he's 3D printed parts of a radar tower for me, and I've got some other parts to it. So it's gonna have this nice big set piece to go with it for Joe to knock out.
This has been the Order of Battle.